From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. James Carville's been around, the Cajun who's always raging, talking politics and life. Stan Greenberg's been around too, polling for every Democratic presidential contender you can recall. Now they're back and big, just as the 2012 campaign really takes off. This one is all about the middle class, they say. Romney doesn't get it, they say. They weren't sure about Obama either. And time is short. This hour, On Point, James Carville and Stan Greenberg say it's the middle class, stupid. You can join the conversation. Is this the issue of 2012, the crisis of the middle class? And who's got the answer? Obama? Romney? Carville? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York City are James Carville and Stan Greenberg. James Carville, political consultant, pundit. He was the lead strategist for Bill Clinton's 1992 It's the Economy Stupid presidential campaign. Advised Hillary Clinton in 08. Stan Greenberg is a Democratic pollster and strategist who's advised Bill Clinton, Al Gore, John Kerry. They're out with a fiery new book titled It's the Middle Class Stupid. James Carville, Stan Greenberg, welcome to you both.
I'm delighted to be here.
Yes, sir.
So,
enough about it.
Hey, listen, we thought we were hearing a lot about the middle class, and you're saying it's not enough. James, what's been missing here?
Well, we haven't had a real debate that's put them front and center, that's centered around the middle class. And what we have found in over a period of time, doing a lot of research, is first, this is a problem that's been going on for a long time. It didn't start with the financial crisis. It clearly made it much, much worse. And secondly, that people's lives have just literally been destroyed in this country, and they don't feel like they're part of the policy equation in Washington. And I completely agree with them. I don't think that they have been, and I think we've lost a great part of the middle class in America, and we're losing people in it every day, and it's the number one issue facing this country.
You say the elites in the media, in politics in particular, are just missing it. Paint the picture. What are they missing, James?
Well, let me give you an example of what they're missing. The Washington consensus, the elite consensus, is we have a big deficit, so we need to cut Social Security. That is the generally accepted view.
Republican, Democrat, both sides.
Yes, of course. We've got to do something about these damn entitlements. My God, everybody knows that. Okay, so they would say that, you know, we've been paying this all the time. The elites conjure up this idea to go to war. They go tax cuts. They bail out the banks. They have a prescription drug benefit. They do all of this. And now they say they want us to pay for their debt out of our Social Security. You know, if you want to strengthen Social Security, then we'll look at that. But don't take out the one thing that benefits us. Not TARP, not tax cuts for the rich, not AIG, not all of these, you know, corporate welfare. But the one thing that benefits us, the elite consensus is that we ought to pay that. And they don't want to do it, and I don't blame them.
Stan Greenberg, you're the pollster. Are you so sure you've got it right? I'm looking at the latest polling here on President Obama and Governor Romney. And this is ABC News, Washington Post, just out yesterday. And they are straight up flat tied, 47-47. So what makes you so sure you've got your finger on a pulse that somebody's missing here?
You know, first of all, on the polls themselves, if you look across all the polls, including other polls today, there's probably about a 3-point lead. But we're not missing anything in the sense that this is a close election. It's a close election, above all because of the economy, the very tough economy, and it's gonna be a big tough race to get there, which is why you have to focus on the middle class, because that's where the real energy is in the country. That's where the central problem is. That's where voters are desperate to see a change and where you want to take the country. I mean, what really struck us as we've done this research is how smart people are about the scale of the problems facing the country and how open they are to solutions that really are face the long-term challenges. And it's not just about the crisis and recovery. You know, as James wrote in his part of this, you know, book, this patient, you know, had pneumonia before this pickup truck hit it.
The pickup truck, as in the crisis of 08 and since
right.
then.
And it's a three-decade, you know, better under President Clinton, but it's a three-decade crisis, which is a change in the American character. Jobs don't increase in pay. Jobs go overseas. People are weighed down by personal debt and the government weighed down by debt as well. There's a corrupt system between Wall Street and Washington that keeps government from working for the middle class. And that's been going on for a long time. And so people are looking for not just what are you going to do to address the recovery or what did you just do in the last 4 years. They want to know what are you going to do to get this country back for the middle class when people who worked hard, when they worked and saved for their kids, followed their children, presumed that next generation would do better. That's the central issue.
And it's not there for them now. We talk a lot about that on this show, but what to do about it is the question. You say Americans in your polling are very smart and very nuanced and subtle in their understanding of what's going on. But then look at those poll numbers again. Just take the one, 47%. If 47% of Americans are saying, or likely voters, saying they're going for Mitt Romney right now, that has to include a lot of middle class who are thinking he's got the formula, Stan.
No. I know you addressed the question as Stan, but I wouldn't extrapolate that he has a formula. What would you expect in 8.2% unemployment? And under 2% growth, a consumer confidence number in the low 70s, you would think that the incumbent would be 10, 12 points behind, not tied. I mean, it's almost amazing that the Democrats are tied in this environment.
If you look across all of the OECD countries, you know, we've seen leaders right and left, you know, wiped out. You know, you need to have almost 4% GNP growth in order for an incumbent leader to survive. You know, the fact that the president is tied or ahead in this climate – you know, his testimony to, you know, some of the successes of his policies and where he is as a leader compared to the Romney and where the Democrats are overall. But it's not good enough because we're not going to make changes unless we have an election that's about this issue and creates the mandate to address the middle class.
James Carville, you and Stan and Moore came out just a couple of weeks ago and said the Obama campaign is not getting it. They're not on the right theme. They're talking about the progress they're making in bringing the economy back. And that's wrong? How could that be wrong?
Because people want an election about the future, not the past. And every time that they would say that we have brought this economy back, we're doing better, everybody that we did research which would say, well, he doesn't understand. Does he really think my life is getting better? If he says this, he doesn't understand how things are bad out there. They needed to make the turn to talk about the future and what they were going to do to try to rebuild the middle class. I think in the last 3 or 4 weeks, the president has done that. I think his campaign has gotten a lot better. I saw a story in the New York Times this morning of him sitting at a table with a family talking about their taxes. I think this is exactly the kind of thing that he does. I thought that tactically they've been very aggressive, and I very much like what I've been seeing of late. But I think it is completely – totally the wrong thing to do is talk about the last 4 years. That's what people know what happened. They know what he inherited. They want to know what the next four are going to look like.
But aren't people looking and saying, and Stan's talking about this in the poll numbers, thinking to themselves, if you can't bring the economy back, how am I going to be better off? I mean, isn't that the logic that the White House was following in trying to say, look, we've made progress here and here and here? Isn't that the proof people want?
Look, every leader I've ever worked for, including Bill Clinton, wants to convince people that they're doing a good job on the economy. It's a leadership question. It's a macho question that they want to go to the country with. Bill Clinton in 94 couldn't do that, but in 96 that he could. And I think what we see now is that people are listening to voters. We spend a lot of time listening to them. And they don't care about the last 4 years. They don't care in the sense that they know about Bush's responsibility for this mess. They know what happened on Wall Street. They know their own responsibility. They're very serious about everybody sharing in the responsibility and causing this mess. Mm-hmm. What they care about – this is a tactical political question, which is a reasonable question. I promise you everybody asks it. But what the voters are saying is we know everybody was complicit in getting here. We know these are serious issues. What are you going to do about it? What's the future? What's your offer?
What's the option here, though, James, other than doing well on the economy? I mean, Mitt Romney says that's it. Build the economy. That brings the economy back. That brings the American people back. That brings the middle class back.
But I guess there's a couple of things here. So let's see. The way that you're going to do well on the economy, Mitt Romney, is you're going to give rich people another 20% tax break because that worked so well before. And the way you're going to do well on the economy, Mr. Romney, is you're going to get rid of Dodd-Frank, which has some regulations because the banks did just such a wonderful job before. The way you're going to bring back the economy, Mr. Romney, is you're going to stop direct student loan lending, which is going to cost $60 billion to college students right now who are strapped with debt like we never seen. Mr. Romney, would you tell me three things that you've proposed that wasn't tried by George W. Bush?
And on the other side, what is it that you think you need to want to hear from President Obama that will respond to what you're hearing from the middle class?
I want him to make the election about the middle class and what the middle class future is going to be. If you go back to 92 when we worked for Bill Clinton, when we used the phrase, it's the economy, stupid. When Bill Clinton was elected, when that election was over, his first State of the Union joint session address was on the economy. He said, I'm not going to talk about any other aspect of the State of the Union. I'm going to only deal with how we get our economy back. If we have an election, that's about the future of the middle class, and that's what people are invested in, and that's the mandate afterwards, and he goes to the State of the Union after this election and says, I'm going to lay out the future on how we're going to bring back the income levels, how people are going to support education, how we're going to protect retirement security, and also deal with our long-term debt, he will have the country's attention and the support to do it. So he should go forward with a future-oriented message on the middle class. Our data says that's also politically effective. It's not just we think it's right because people are concerned with this. It's the most effective political message. People want an election about the future, and there's a big choice between Romney and Obama.
But isn't that future, James, also about growth and debt and spending? Aren't the same issues waiting out there?
Well, you see, if you come at it and you say, this is the Washington consensus, You say the biggest thing is debt. We say the biggest thing is how do you grow the middle class? So if you conclude the biggest thing is debt, that you have to do something about the entitlements. You have to do something about Medicare spending, right?
Yeah.
So what you do is you say, let's shift what the government spends on health care to what the individual spends. Well, if you're in the beleaguered middle class and under plans that you see, it's $6,000 a cost shift in a year that goes to the government.
Hold
the
that cost shift, James. Hold that cost shift. We're right up against a break. We're talking about the 2012 elections and the state of the middle class with James Carville and Stan Greenberg. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking this hour about the 2012 elections and the state of the American middle class with James Carville and Stan Greenberg. They say the election ought to be all about the middle class, as it was all about the economy when Carville ran, guided Bill Clinton's 1992 campaign. They're out with a fiery new book. It's The Middle Class, Stupid. It's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. They're joining us from New York. They put out a memo a couple of weeks ago saying, hey, stop talking about how the economy's coming back and talk about what you're going to do for the middle class, President Obama. Maybe he was listening. Here he was in Cedar Rapids yesterday asking voters to grant him a second term, laying out the choices before the electorate.
We're going to have two choices in this election. And one choice is to take us down a path of top-down economics and an approach that says if we do good for folks at the very top, somehow everybody benefits. And my vision, which says, you know, when we grow best, it's because our middle class is doing well. And everybody who's fighting to get into the middle class.
President Obama yesterday in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, but he is not the only one talking and thinking about the middle class. Here's Mitt Romney in Grand Junction, Colorado.
I know that last week the middle class of America got a kick in the gut when the jobs numbers came out. We found out we'd created only 80,000 jobs. Our nation needs to create about double that if we're going to keep up with the population growth of our nation, and so we're falling further behind under this presidency, and that's one reason why we're going to change him and get someone in there who'll get this economy going.
Mitt Romney says, let's kick it up. James Carville and Stan Greenberg say, make it the middle class, make that the main message, that this country is not this country without that middle class. James, Stan, let's go to our listeners. Ann Arbor, Michigan, John is calling. John, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I really appreciate this very much. I'm afraid that I have very negative attitudes both towards the theme of your program and the theme of the two political parties.
Let's hear it.
I think both are pandering to the middle class. I do think the election should be about the future, but the idea of growing the middle class in terms of the realities we face, particularly peak oil, I think is totally unrealistic. The middle class has to be told that we're going to have a decent country in the future. They have to pay more taxes. And they have to be told that bluntly. Neither political parties will do that. We desperately need to open up our political processes to third parties that will do that candidly, like Ross Perot did in 1992. And the only way to do that is voting reform that changes our voting system.
John, let us pick it up. James Carville, are you pandering here to the middle class? Is even your party not prepared to say what needs saying?
Right, right. Let's just start with a simple fact here. Is that depending on how you count from 1979 to now, the middle class's incomes have either gone up 21 or 37%. But under any scenario, it's about 1% a year. In the last 4 years, the middle class households have lost 40% of their net worth. All right?
Yeah.
They've been whammed by everything else. So what we need to do is have an election. We go to people and they say, you're taking kids in. You're taking your 30-year-old kids and having to live with you because they can't find a job. You've lost your job. You're starting a lawnmower service. But you know what? You're not paying enough in taxes, hoss. We're gonna hit you again. And I don't think that's going to win very many elections, I'll be honest with you. I think that, and by the way, we got to be further frank with you. We got to cut. You got to pay more for an education.
You got to share in the sacrifice.
Yeah, you got to share in the sacrifice. And I think these people would say, man, I didn't know I hadn't been sacrificing before.
So how do we pay? How do we pay the freight?
They got a lot of skin in the game.
How do we pay the freight?
Let me take the side of the caller on this question, because what we're raising, we say this issue should be central because we believe it's not been. You know, it's episodic when people go to the middle class. And indeed, when ordinary voters look at what's happened with Wall Street and Washington, they think are totally crowded out. They saw the bailouts, TARP. You know, they think this was an elite deal at their expense while nothing was done about the issues that faced them. That's why in this book we say we got to start with reform. You know, before you get to what we should do in terms of policy on health care or Medicare or Social Security or education, we got to clean up the political system. We have a chapter that starts right there. How do we get the money? How do we get the money out? How do we have free media? How do we get, you know, reduce the power of
special amendments and all the rest there?
Yes, we need it.
That's a tall hill to climb. And meanwhile, everybody needs to get out of the ditch right now. I mean, the country can get on that, but that's, you know, that doesn't happen overnight. And here's our caller saying, who's going to pay the freight?
Hey, the best time to plant an oak tree was 25 years ago. The second best time is today.
I hear that. Nancy in Auburn, Alabama. Nancy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My concern is that the middle class truly is sinking. And prices have gone up, you know, bread, clothing, at least 5 times. People's salaries have not increased 5 times, whereas top executives have gone up 500%, and profits are continuing to rise. But nothing is being done for the people that are trying to survive. I know a gentleman who was allowed to keep his job, but he's taking half of what his salary is now.
So
cannot survive.
What does that leave you thinking, Nancy, when you listen to Mitt Romney, when you listen to President Obama, when you listen to James Carville? What are you thinking about? What ought to happen?
I think we need to be spending less money on advertising for campaigns and putting that money back into people's pockets and change our laws on how what's allowed to be paid for campaigns by PACs, should be publicly funded. Everybody should be given X amount of money and let the best man come forward.
Okay, clean up the elections. But what about when Mitt Romney says, let's fire up this economy again, and that's going to get people working. That's going to get the money back in your pocket. How do you hear that, Nancy?
No, it's not. It's not. I mean, I think everyone does, like the prior caller said, needs to pay a fair amount of taxes. And the people at the bottom have nothing to give. They are just scraping by. The people at the top have more than enough. They can go, you know, buy as many cars as they want, go on as many trips as they want, what have you. Well, we're the middle class. It's just as in the medieval times. We have the same kind of philosophy. The people at the top get all the benefits, all the tax breaks, all the, you know, somewhere it has to stop. Someone has to say, this has to stop. We have to be fair for everyone, the middle class, people who make more, pay more.
Nancy, I think that's pretty much what James and Stan are saying. Right. And James, policy-wise, what are you saying to her?
All right, let me make an important point here. Mm-hmm. Because our first caller was from Ann Arbor, and our second caller was from Auburn, right? And which gets you to thinking, what are Ann Arbor and Auburn both known for? A
couple of colleges.
Yeah, a couple of universities, and both of them quite fine American universities. Mm-hmm. And the biggest ticket in the middle class, will tell you this, the biggest ticket to the middle class is an education. There's no doubt about that. Mm. Now, this is one example. President Obama signed a law in a student loan program. It used to be that the federal government would give the banks the money. The banks would lend the money to the students. The federal government would assume the risk if the students didn't pay, but if they paid, the bank got to keep the interest rate. It was about $60 billion. The president changed that, where the federal government went to direct student lending, saved $60 billion, which they put back into education. Romney yesterday, after he has the Hamptons fundraiser, says that he wants to go back to the old way. Now, conservative
with
education.
With private banks in the middle there, yeah.
Put the banks in the middle so you spend another $60 billion so the banks can make more profit. And so the kids that go to University of Michigan or go to Auburn are going to be strapped with more debt. Now, this is one example of the kinds of things that are happening in this country.
But they're strapped
now
with the government doing that debt as well, and people are saying, you know, maybe all that lending is part of what's driving the prices up
so
high.
You think that student loan program, giving people coming back and access to an education, I think that's good government spending. I think that's the kind we should engage in. I'm completely miffed at the idea that somehow or another there's something wrong with a kid that doesn't have an access to education that the government can't have a low interest rate loan for him.
Make it available. But listen, can we dig in a little deeper here? Our listeners are listening very closely. As you stand, say, and you, James Carville, say, they're smart, they're nuanced. Here's Alex, who's writing to us, James, as he listens online. He says, how does James Carville reconcile the fact that the Clinton policy through NAFTA, neoliberal foreign policy, and welfare reform has done as much damage to the middle class and poor in America and throughout the world as the Bush policy? This is a choice between instant death, Bush policy, and slow death by a thousand cuts, Clinton policy. He writes, what we really need here is FDR's policy to get us out of this depression and restore the middle class. But he's looking at policies associated with you, James Carville.
Well, I would answer very simply. In the 30 years that we've seen it, the only time we've had any growth in middle class incomes was under President Clinton. So the facts, as I like to say, the facts speak for themselves.
But we do go back to the Clinton period and say, all right, what in the Clinton period, what policies, you know, produce benefits for the middle class and broadly for the working poor as well? The starting point is the 39.6% tax rate.
That was the top rate then. That's been whacked down. You'd bring it back?
Absolutely. And the other piece, which is less talked about, is his deficit reduction plan, his economic plan. It was a 50-50 deal. And he was very self-conscious when he sold it. He went on TV from the Oval Office.
What do you mean 50-50?
The day before the vote, which had a pie chart, 50% revenue, new taxes, 50% spending cuts. Mm-hmm. That's a 50-50 deal. You know, everybody playing a fair part in getting this down, addressing this deficit. Those were the two biggest things. And he also introduced the child tax credit, expanded it, and earned income tax credit for working people and low-income working people. And we had broad shared prosperity in the late 90s. You know, there are other policies you talked about, or your caller, writer talked about, but there are serious policies that impacted the state of this country.
But is that enough? Is that enough structural change? If you just raise the top rate, that's a big deal.
No.
If you go 50-50 to bring this economy back, because a lot of people, maybe Nancy and Auburn, are looking and saying, you know what, it's just not working for the middle, no matter how you slice it.
Well, you know what, let's just start. Suppose that you raise the top rate to 39.6, all right? Then suppose that you got reduced healthcare costs to just right now we're 6 points of GDP above the next highest nation. Suppose we reduced it to just 3 points of GDP of the next highest nation. And suppose that you made access to education easier. All right, and you did these kind of, you would help the economy a lot. Who's to say that wouldn't really? What Romney's prescription is to go back to do the same thing that got us into it. Why should we believe him?
Is President Obama's health care reform going to bring you that health care cost reduction?
It has the potential to do that. We think that in educative terms, he ought to have been talking more often about the fact that it makes it more affordable, that it can drive down prices, that there are mechanisms here to bring down costs. And what we do in this book and say, we should focus in on the healthcare reforms and double down. take those elements and enable us to reduce costs in this healthcare system and be bold about it and get out there and try to get healthcare costs down. Because frankly, there's nothing more important in terms of helping the middle class, but also reducing the deficit.
Bruce in Kensington, Kentucky, if I may, James, I'll come right to you. Bruce in Kensington, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty well.
The question I have is, given the conditions that this country enjoyed following the end of World War II, why should the middle class ever be able to come back to where it once was? An example. In 1948, we didn't know anybody who owned a television set. By 1952, everybody owned a television set, which meant that at least 150 million television sets were manufactured in the United States, exclusively in the United States.
So why can't we do it again? There's always a new product coming around the bend. You're saying that
you're not going to see the same conditions again, for one thing. And my next question was, how many television sets were built in the United States last year? Zero. Not a single one.
Bruce, we've got it. I mean, James Carville, a lot of people feel like the world economy has just changed in a way that does not favor the conditions that built that middle class that we so love. It's just gone.
Right. But look, he makes a superb point. And let me make a point beyond a point that he's making. What we need to do, I think, this is just me personally, is we need to look at people like China or India, people like that around the world, and stop thinking of them as competitors and start thinking of them as customers. And have the mentality is, what is it that we can make that they can buy? Maybe televisions is not one of them. How about agricultural products? How about entertainment? How about airplanes? How about locomotives? How about automobiles? We sell more Buicks in China than we do North America. How about different parts of technology that we can expand and we can build? Our manufacturing is actually doing a little bit better here. And we can continue to do these kind of things. But it might be that the cornerstone of our economy in 1940, from 1948 to 1952, which might have been electronics and textiles, might not be there. That doesn't mean that we can't do these kinds of things. You know, the biggest error we made, and this happened in the early 80s, is we decided to go from a nation that bought stuff, that made stuff, to be a nation that buys stuff. We need to rethink our mentality. Kind of a real way.
So what is the super rise of the 1%, which you complain about in here at the expense of the middle class? How has that hit the middle class? Mitt Romney says, let's all rise together, job creators, middle class, everybody. Why not?
Well, I will argue. Go ahead.
I mean, his policy is to cut taxes 20% beyond George Bush, to cut 20% beyond that for the upper income and the wealthy. What is the evidence from the period of George Bush's presidency, from the period of both Bush's presidencies? What is the evidence that produces jobs?
Yeah. Well, exactly. What we have evidence now. All right. The argument is, and first of all, that if you give the top 1% a tax break, that they will spend the money and then everybody else will do better. All right. The truth of the matter is that we raised taxes on the top 1% in 1993 and grew 22 million jobs. In 2001, we cut taxes on the top 1% and grew 1 million jobs. The argument is over. We're wasting air discussing this.
And voters totally understand it. They do not see tax cuts as economic policy that has any real benefit for the long term or for the middle class.
And you see evidence that President Obama has got the plan up his sleeve to bring it back for the middle class if he gets another term?
There's a lot of evidence in the last few days that he's been laying out policies that are consistent with that. And if the election is about economic performance over the last 4 years, you know, it's a very tough election. But if it's a choice between cutting taxes for the wealthy as an economic philosophy and a way to, you know, bring economic growth versus helping the middle class with education and taxes, it's not going to be a close election.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with James Carville and Stan Greenberg. They're out with a new book. It's The Middle Class Stupid. They're looking at what they think ought to be the big message, is the main concern in their view of the 2012 presidential election and beyond. The president talking about the middle class in recent days a lot. Mitt Romney talking about it as well. But there's still that question about who ought to be taxed, where the money ought to go. At a Romney event in Colorado yesterday, a supporter asked Mr. Romney, Governor Romney, about money and wealth and fairness.
So why is the Obama team and the liberal media want us to think that we should be more angry with what you do with your money than what Obama has done with mine.
I'm not going to apologize for success at home, and I'm not going to apologize for America abroad.
What you do with your money, I guess that's Switzerland and the Cayman Islands, but a lot of people worried about what happens right here in this country, how government money has been spent. And James Carville, you know that's been an awfully big concern for a long time now. You're saying tax more, but there's a voter saying, hey, tax more, and I just don't believe you're going to spend it right.
Well, first of all, it's a good reason to doubt how the federal government spends money. The effect of interest groups and lobbyists and God knows what not have a big effect on that. Look, the argument here is, and I'll go back to what he said. But we're making the argument is that if the central problem in the United States is what's happened to the middle class, that's going to lead you to a set of policy prescriptions. If you say the central problem is something else, that's going to lead you to a different set of policy prescriptions. That's what we're talking about in the book. We talk about when people like say the number one issue is the debt. We like to say, look, the debt is a huge issue. And if you get too much debt, you would destroy the middle class. But what you want to do is solve the deficit problem in a way that keeps intact and actually helps the middle class. That's the entire argument of the book. Also, the argument of the book, to go with what the gentleman was saying, is that unless you have true reform, that you're not going to be able to accomplish the things that you need to accomplish. That's pretty much what, you know, the crux of what we're saying here.
And you go right to the heart of the country's character. You say it is not America without that strong middle class. What's burning down as the middle class burns down?
That's the starting point for us. That's why we did this book. It's the benefit that we had. We had parents who worked hard, educated us, were, you know, involved with us, and we went from one generation to another that, you know, grew. That's their sense of America. And that's still true. You know, what's really interesting in the groups, these are really tough groups. The woman earlier who talked about the fact that jobs, you know, pay less at grocery stores, people are really struggling, you know, to get by. These are tough times. But amidst all that, they are trying to figure out how they can help their kids, how they can get educated, you know, what is the, you know, how they can get the new skills. You know, they are really being inventive and determined, you know, to figure out a way forward. Now they want to see leaders who also are going to help them in that process and also have a way, you know, forward. Education is like a central piece to the American dream and to people's personal strategy for success, and that's what we have to get right.
But let me ask you, when you start right off saying we're writing this book because we failed, and that's not good enough. There's no other way to put it. You say we failed. Both of us spent a life focused on what's happening with working people and them getting a fair shake for a hard day's work, on them getting the chance to move up the ladder, and we failed. Why is that? Why that failure, James? Is it something in the policies you've pushed? Is it something in what are you up against? Is it your own policies? Is it something else? Why the failure?
Well, if you go in the book, we talk about the sort of whole fog machine. Look, there's a lot of people who make a lot of money on a low wage, high pollution country. All right, that's a fact. There's nobody. Where's the Institute for the Study of the Middle Class? Is there one at the University of Michigan? Is there one at Auburn? I don't think so. Where's the Joint Presidential Commission on, you know, how to address the problems of the great American middle class? I don't see that. Where's the organization in Washington that's deserved to the preservation and enhancement of the American middle class? So, it doesn't exist.
So what are you saying with that? That in the absence of that, it's been a high pollution, low wage agenda pushed by somebody, and that's one?
Of course. By and large, what do you think these super PAC people, where are they coming from? Look what's happened to wages in this country. Look what's happened to benefits in this country. Look what's happened across the board. Look how much the cost of an education is going up. Look what's happened to state funding in higher education. These things are happening all around us, and this is what the sort of central thing is. People go to focus groups. You never go to one of these things where somebody doesn't break down crying about what's happened to their life. And the supreme indifference that I sense in this country to policy to some policymakers and elites to this, I don't like it, and neither does Stan, and that's why we wrote the book.
But the implicit message and a lot of the pushback is, look, this is the way it is. This is the new global economy. These are the wages we can make. These are the regulations on environment we can't afford. This is it, middle class. This is what we've got now.
That could be true.
Oh.
You You know, no, it could be true. We know as we do this, and we, you know, we write it at the end with some reflection, you know. But we also spend all this time listening to people in groups and the pain they're going through and all their personal strategies for them to be successful. And we say, we can't settle for that. We can't say that this is inevitable, that the global forces are so strong, that wages have to keep going down. But in fact, there are things we can do to change that. And we lay out some of that in the book. But a lot of it is here where we say we owe it to the people that we've been listening to and working for to get this right. They are looking for an alternative, and that's why we wrote the book.
Yeah, you know, if somebody wants to tell people that you're doomed to a low-wage, high-pollution, you know, high-cost education, high-cost healthcare world, and that's just the world you live in, get over it, let it be somebody other than me, because I don't believe that. I believe if we had the same kind of creativity and the same kind of energy to try to solve these problems as people went to try to make these problems, I think we could solve a lot more. But I do not accept the inevitability that education costs have to rise exponentially higher than the rate of inflation, or healthcare costs, or that wages have to be stagnant for 75% of these countries over the next 30 years, or that pollution is the only way that we can grow jobs. I just don't buy it.
And turn everybody into paupers. Ashani in Tullahoma, Tennessee. Ashani, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thanks. Hi. I had a couple of things. One, since the foreclosure crisis seemed to be what threw the economy into such a downturn, why didn't the government, instead of giving banks all that money, just go ahead and help people pay their mortgages off? If you solve that problem where it began, it seems like that would have solved all the other problems. Two, I think big problem in our country is that we worship the rich, and that's how Mitt the Silver Spoon Romney can be so popular. What in the world does he possibly know about the middle class and about working?
What do you know about foreclosure, Ashani?
Well, I do know that if my wife does not procure gainful employment, we may be facing foreclosure ourselves. I'm getting ready to start a very rigorous graduate program, so I'm going to have to quit both of my jobs. And she actually is a healthcare professional with an advanced practice nursing degree and is having some problems finding a really decent paying job. So our plan was to piggyback on each other, and now we're getting ready for me to get started doing my thing, and it looks like things may be getting a little bit more difficult for her.
Ashani, we've got it, and I appreciate your call right there. All right, here's an example. Ashani says, why didn't President Obama, you know, bail out homeowners instead of banks? Mitt Romney and others say, you know, what we should be doing here is let the market clear so prices come back down to where we can find a firm footing and really get started again. What do you guys say?
First of all, it's the absolute right focus if you want to try to understand how the country has reacted to this economic crisis and the elite response to it. Because the signature policy event was TARP, the vote to save the banks. If you want to look at political leaders who have been thrown out of office, it's because of their vote for TARP. And even before the election, the country looked at that, both candidates, both parties, all, you know, rallied to try to save the banks. I'm sure the right thing to do. And President Obama rescued the auto industry, and I'm sure the right thing to do. But what voters came to believe, and Democrats paid a big price for it in 2010, is that the Democrats were part of that same elite consensus that we save, you know, the banks, we save, you know, the people who caused the problem, and do nothing for the people who are working hard and were responsible. Now, I should also add, the public itself is a little bit broader in its analysis and thinks it shares the responsibility. They think they personally took on too much debt, they ran up credit cards, that the values, the culture they were part of was part of the problem. Now, they're critical of the banks too and the politicians for not overseeing the banks. So they have a very, I think, considered and complex view of the responsibility and cause of it. But they think, you know, they understand the economic philosophy of those who are in power, and it includes the president, that they are, you know, rescuing those who caused the problem. Now, the president's come back a long way, and I support his policies, but it's you're highlighting the right issue.
Let me just make a historical observation here, a gentleman's question. Mm-hmm. The Tea Party was actually started because there was a proposal to give some help to some homeowners. And that's when Rick Santelli went berserk on CNBC.
On CNN. Yeah, CNBC, yeah.
And that was the actual, believed to be the origin of the Tea Party, because the argument is,
what are we going to do, bail out everybody?
You're not going to bail out everybody. You know, we got to stop. And if the people had pulled the wagon, et cetera, et cetera.
That resonated.
Yeah, we did, in our poll, we did cause a financial crisis. We have it in the book. And the number one cause, people say, is people taking on too much debt. The next is banks making risky loans.
Yep.
Weak government regulation, and then go sort of down from there to global financial ties and the financial system being too complicated. So, but those are the real, real causes that people felt. So that became something that happened. Now, had we had any kind of regulation in place, had these things were all encouraged by real, real leverage and risk-taking among the banks, and they were leveraging themselves sometimes up to 40 to 1, and once the thing blew up, it's hard to get back in. And I understand. I can sympathize completely with this gentleman. He's apparently trying to do the right thing. He's trying to get more educated. Yeah. His wife's a skilled worker. God bless him, and I hope it works out for him.
Listen, I found compelling, James, in your writing, though, about how elites, and Stan says, you know, Democrats were part of the elite consensus that led to the bank bailout here, and you write about how people in power are just getting so far away from understanding what's really happening with the middle class. They actually don't even see it. They do not perceive it, in part because of the structure of the economy we're slipping into.
Yeah, it does. And you know, it's one of those, and it did cause, you know, we detected in some of our research that some people kind of, although the auto bailout worked, some people are a little bit resented and said, gee, why didn't somebody, you know, I didn't get bailed out. Why do they? Now, there was a good reasons for that. I'm sure that people would say there were good reasons for the, but a bank bailout is you know, economics is not a morality play. And, you know, obviously the Europeans are going to have to do the same thing at a point. But then I go back to these things happen. It was a terrible, it's still a terrible period. What people are looking for is how are we going to rebuild this country in a way that this doesn't happen again and where people have a real shot at the middle class? That's the kind of ultimate question. And it's not an easy question. I'd be the first to concede that. And the answers are not easy. We wrote the book because we really wanted to bring attention to get people to talking about this issue.
Let's go to Patrick in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Patrick, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I appreciate what these guys are saying a whole lot. But I think we need to reframe the discussion a little bit.
Okay.
I think there's a class war going on. I hear all this middle class, you know, and it's working poor now instead of working class. And the elephant in the room is that there's a class war going on, and the money bags are winning.
So what does that say to you, Patrick? What does that mean we ought to do?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I mean, what we need to acknowledge that there's a war going on and that the poor are being robbed.
Hey, let us pick it up right there. Warren Buffett, you guys quote him in the book, says, yes, indeed, there is one. And Warren Buffett, billionaires, says, my class is winning. Right. Are you embracing the class war framing here? Patrick in Cedar Rapids says, go for it.
Yeah, look, first of all, there's been a class warfare going on. And a class warfare is all about low wages and about low wages for workers and low taxes for the 1%. Warren Buffett's exactly right. He acknowledged it. So the idea that somehow or another the people in the middle are starting a class war is ludicrous. They've been the victims of a war for a long, long time. Look at what's happened to and I'd be critical of the government, but look at the ethics. Look at this LIBOR thing.
This is the fixing of the interest rates off of the London Interbank. Yep.
Right. In the same – the huge scandal over there. There's a huge scandal here in the United States where these banks were fixing the interest rates that they were charging municipalities and counties and things like that on money that they were keeping for them. Mm-hmm. And there was no idea. There's no sense of ethics about this. You read the emails that they have today in the New York Times will make you sick. And, you know, a lot of times the interest on that student loan that somebody's paying, the interest that gentleman might have been paid for his house is all tied to this interest rate that was being manipulated over there in London. And, you know, so if you come in and you say, we need to regulate these banks, and they come through after this and they go Dodd-Frank and they say, this is class warfare. We need to do what we want to. That's the answer against everything. You know, the president, you know, the country needs to realize that we've lost. You know, in Wall Street certainly lead the way. Washington, I don't apologize for, Stan and I argue. that one of the problems is people have lost faith in government, so they tend to not to be skeptical of Democrats because we tend to have more government mm-hmm. solutions. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of work to do in this country to get some trust back to people because they don't trust a lot of people anymore, and for very, very good reason.
What happens if we don't get it right? What happens if we don't get it right?
Well, you know, we become
the stakes are very look. The stakes are very high, and people are very invested in this country getting it right. They're doing it. People are doing it at a personal level with unbelievable difficulty. And they are looking now to the economic and political class to make some big choices that are right for the country. That's why this election is so important, and this is why we try in this book to highlight the issues that will put the middle class at the center of it. And it forces both leaders, but I think particularly President Obama, who has a vision to lay out where he's going to take this country that rescues the middle class, and the voters will rally to that. That's what they're looking for. They're demanding it.
You think he's on board with his crew now? You guys spoke up a couple weeks ago, and his speeches
yeah, we did.
Have,
we're,
your,
we're,
have your complexion.
We're both very pleased. We like the direction.
We know they
so
wanted
far.
To go there. We're really on board.
Well,
we're on board.
We will see. It's right in front of us now, and the middle class, it's the middle class stupid is the name of the book and kind of the name of the theme that James Carville and Stan Greenberg are proposing to the president and the country. Joining us today from New York, James, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you. It was a great interview. You do it. It's a
pleasure.
Yes, you got it's wonder. You got a good show. I'm not
thanks
surprised.
So much.
You do a great job.
Thank you very much. Stan Greenberg, great to have you as well. Thanks for joining us. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.